And I mentioned Kapanen's name, and then here he is, and I don't think that he's having success because of who he's playing with. It certainly looks like he's having success because he's good. Have you opened up another avenue of money you're going to have to pay somebody because this guy's getting an opportunity to run up some numbers now?
Well, I think that ice time and who he's playing with, that'll get allocated back to William Nylander if and when he signs. And I think you'll see Kasperi Kapanen drop off a bit if Nylander comes back. But he's certainly taking advantage of his opportunity.
You must have, and you've had transcendent players. You've had Hall of Fame players. So when you're running a team and it's got a Getzlaff and a Perry or the Sedins or even that great Vancouver line we've talked about before with Brendan Morrison and Todd Bertuzzi, do you look and say, we can really put, there's a lot of guys we can put on that line, and we can put a street light out there, and they're going to get 25 and 25 playing with transcendent superstars, right?
Yes, that's true. And I think, but you can't belittle or somehow dismiss what Kasperi Kapanen is doing. It's pretty impressive. But the fact is, I mean, Frank Avery, that ran the NHL officials for years, used to tell the linesmen, there's a linesman on every corner in Canada, every street corner in Canada. So can you find a player to play with players like that? Yes. Will they produce? Yes. But he's really taken it up a notch. He's actually elevating the Lions' play. He's been good.
Like, I'd give you an example, and I'd go to, and I think this guy's a super guy, and I met him, and he's wonderful, but Matt Molson. There's Matt Molson on Tavares' wing who scores, well, you're with the Leafs, he scores 30, 31, 36. I'm sure he scored a lot of big goals against the Leafs when you were there, and the Sabres go all in on a huge contract with him, and he's not playing with John Tavares all of a sudden. It guys can drop off the face of the earth offensively when they get away from Sedins and Crosbys and Tavares and like I said, Getzlaffs and Malkins, right?
Correct, and that's Matt Molson's the best example of that. But go back to the Sedins, we had trouble finding someone to play with them. It wasn't that simple that anyone could play with them. We actually had trouble finding them the right line mate. After Trent Klatt left, it took us a while. So they never really had that third guy for 5 or 6 or 7 years that play with them. Anson Carter had a good year with them. But so what Kasperi Kapanen is doing, yes, you could say that he's Matt Molson. But he's also taking advantage of the opportunity and playing well.
Our NHL Insider brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln. It's Brian Burke. And certainly, if Nylander were to come back and end up on the line that he was meant to be on, that would free up Kasperi Kapanen to, I don't know, maybe play with Nazem Kadri, who's off to a little bit of a slow start. And he looks on his wings, and he doesn't exactly right now have the players that he was playing with last year.
Well, I don't think players care about their point totals when they're winning. I really don't. I mean, I drafted Nazem Kadri, and I think if you ask them today how his day's going, he'd tell you it's going fantastic. They're playing great. They're in first place. And anyone who's worried about their own numbers, A, when your team's in first place, and B, when it's in October, pretty selfish guy, and that's not. So his goals will come. I'd like to see him get more minutes, but I think that's a problem for the coaching staff to get minutes distributed evenly among this group.
I think he's playing really well. I think he's doing a lot of the right things. So we looked this morning, and it's ludicrous to look at the standings. But for some who forecast maybe two Canadian teams out of seven in the playoffs, maybe three at best, six Canadian teams sit in playoff spots. Is there a team? Is it the Habs? Is it the Sens? Is it the Canucks that you look at and you go, even by short-term, small sample size standards, they're impressing me?
Well, I really thought Ottawa was going to have a tough year, and I really thought Vancouver was going to have a tough year. The two teams I wasn't sure about were Edmonton and Calgary. Mm-hmm. I thought Winnipeg was going to have a good year. I thought Montreal was going to have a decent year, and I thought Toronto was going to have a good year. So the two teams I would say that surprised me most right now have been Vancouver and Ottawa. Not that they've got great records, but they're certainly better than I expected them to be at this point.
All right, we saw not only an improved New Jersey Devils last year, but a Devils team that played completely different than what we're used to. More high-end, up-tempo kind of hockey, and they're off to a pretty good start. What do you make of them?
I thought they were one of the teams we played last year. They have no gap. Their puck pressure is just, it's stifling. Whenever you have the puck, there's someone in red near you and someone in a layer behind him eliminating your options. They close on the puck carrier and eliminate options, I think, better than anybody. So they're not a – and then they hit a little bit, too. They're fun to watch because they throw the body around a bit. So but they're not a. I don't see them as a. I see them more as a kind of a hybrid top six, bottom six. So they've got their firepower concentrated in their top two lines. Bottom two lines run around, kill penalties, do that. But they've got real good team speed. I like watching them play. I like their team.
Brian Burke, kind enough to join us. Blues Canadians are 7 o'clock tonight from Montreal and Sportsnet 1. Bruins at Flames at the Saddledome 930, Sportsnet 360. So it's. I know you've lamented before the lack of regular season trades. It's got to be money in, money out. That's altered a little bit since the cap came in. But when I look at teams, I thought about, we just mentioned Matt Molson. I thought about how Buffalo, all of a sudden in October, just traded Thomas Vanek, kind of out of nowhere to the New York Islanders. I look at some of the teams that I think have tons of struggles, tons of cap problems. Detroit hasn't won in 6 games. They got a high salary cap. I think they have the highest cap in the league. They're a bit of a mess. When does a team that's really lousy out of the gate say, you know what, we're going to get the jump on rebuilding. We're going to get the jump on everybody and move a guy in the fall, move a guy in a November or a December. Can that happen?
Well, it can happen, but you need what the cap system does. It means your partner has to not only be willing, but he has to be able. He's got to have cap space, and so it's much more complicated. You used to be able to pull off deals easily, quickly, no problem. It's much more complicated in the cap system. So would a Detroit be trying to shake things up right now? For sure. Can they find a dance partner that's got the same needs that, you know, they can adjust and make a deal and also make the cap stuff fit? Pretty complex. You start your trades now with a calculator, and it never used to be that way.
Did you even, and the coach shakeup thing is strange. I know it was sort of famous how Joel Quenneville came in for Denny Savard a couple games into the season. Nobody wants to do it. Nobody ever wants to let go a coach. I get that. But is there any impetus to teams doing it? 10, 12, 14? Well, last year was one of the rare years. I don't think we saw anybody let go, like even up till the trade deadline. Everybody stuck with their coaches. Is there any impetus to do it? Do you only do it when you need an absolute explosion and you can't move players?
Well, first off, you guys will hear this rant a lot since I'm going on with you on a regular basis. I think the National Hockey League is absurdly impatient with managers and coaches. We did a graphic the other day. The fifth most senior coach in the NHL has been around 3 years. 3 years. And so this is absolutely crazy, the turnover. And you only make a I never fired a coach I hired. Like never once. The coaches I fired, I tried to be patient with my coaches because I felt until they had a good enough lineup to win, I couldn't hold them accountable. Up until then, it was my fault. But I look at is someone contemplating that right now, one of these teams that's slow out of the gate? Certainly. And part of the problem is, who's out there? So let's say you think Alain Vigneault is the best candidate that's available. I think he's a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
If you want to hire Alain Vigneault, you better be the first or second team to fire your guy.
And that was the story. I mean, he brought up Joel Quenneville. The fact of the matter was, I know they were 3 games in. Great to read yesterday on The Athletic. It was the 10th anniversary of when that happened. But the Blackhawks had hired Joel Quenneville as a scout, and he was ready to coach with another team in the National Hockey League. And the Blackhawks thought, like, we could lose this guy, and he might be the guy to get us from here to there. And they had an inexperienced coach in Denny Savard. They went ahead and did it.
Yeah, and that's... The pressure is mounting on these guys that come out of the gate, and most of them have had a body of work. So, in other words, if you look at a team and say, okay, last year they missed the playoffs, the year before they missed the playoffs, and now they're having a poor start, you can argue that coach has been given a fair opportunity. I wouldn't agree with that in some cases. If you look at Jeff Blashill in Detroit, they've been patient with him. They're going through a total rebuild. I think it's really hard to hold that coach accountable. What tips it for you as a GM, as a manager, is when your players tell you or their agents call you and tell you that the guy's lost the team. In other words, not just that they're losing, not that the power play stinks, but he's lost his players. They're no longer listening to him. And then you really don't have a choice. You can't bring the guy back from that. Once the team has tuned him out, he's got to go.
A ton of people weighed in on the Matheson suspension. I didn't get to hear your feeling on the play and how it compared maybe to other similar plays. What did you think of the punishment?
Well, I have a rule. I don't quibble with player safety. First off, my son works for player safety.
That's
so
right.
Let's make full disclosure. Patrick Burke is my son, works for these guys. But I'm not going to criticize them when they're within one game of what I think is fair. So in other words, If I think a suspension is worth three games and they give four, I'm keeping my mouth shut because I did that job. And I got so sick of these idiots in the media saying, well, it should have been four. I gave the guy three. And he said, well, it should have been four. I'm like, well, how do you decide that? That's nitpicking at that point. So I'm fine with two games. I thought it was going to come down with one game or a fine, but I'm fine with two games. And this is a good young player, and it was a non-hockey play. The one distinction they're making that I buy completely is whether it's a hockey play or not. If it's outside the rules and it's not a hockey play, he's not trying to complete a pass or finish a body check, this is a body slam. It's not a hockey play. I like that distinction. I accept that as a hockey guy.
Brian, I'm like that with speeding tickets. At 136 and 100, I talk to the cop and I'm like, "How's 122 sound?" And it never quite gets. We never agree.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, we never agree on it.
But
no.
The next question is,
you got to be a lot better looking than you two.
Brian, well, what if the cop is? That's different.
All right, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.